Hello, my name is Chip Lang. You're listening to Total EM. Today, for 2017, I have my first guest for the year. He is actually on here for his second time around. The first time we talked a lot about ketamine. It was on two different episodes. But now we have Min Lekong back. And so he's going to talk to us today. Another thing he likes to talk about, which is about cervical collars. There's been a big push about moving away from rigid C collars as much as possible and going to soft collars. So one of the big advocates out there is Min Lekong, and I wanted to bring him on today so we could talk about that a little bit more. So Min, can you tell us a little bit about maybe some of the pros and cons of why rigid collars versus soft collars, like some of the good things and bad things about both?
Thanks, Chip, for having me back on the show, and Happy New Year in 2017. I think it's been great seeing how your podcast has developed since the very first one, and I congratulate you for that. So I hope more good things from you this year. C-collars is, yes, it's a big passionate topic of mine. I think it was born of several things. I was an ATLS instructor for 7 years, gave my life for 7 years to that course and program, and that they still are and were very big advocates for spinal immobilization, and particularly the use of the hard cervical collar. In fact, as an examiner there, we were told that if a candidate failed to apply a hard cervical collar as basically the first thing they did in the trauma scenario cases, then that was an automatic fail. So that's one, I guess, aspect coming as a former ATLS instructor and being part of a program that was very pro hard cervical collar. Is almost a blind action that you didn't really have to think about it. And then in my own state here in Queensland, as a flying doctor and working with pre-hospital services in the aeromedical setting as well as with ambulance crews, about coming on to 2 years ago now, the ambulance service notified us that they were going to change their whole approach to hard cervical collars. So it was nothing that was initiated by certainly myself or the flying doctor service. It was purely something that the Queensland Ambulance Service had looked into. And when I actually asked them, well, what sparked this kind of drastic change in their approach, it was due to the fact that the regional, so the state spinal specialist service in Brisbane, they basically asked them to stop using hard cervical collars. So that sounds incredible, but that's exactly what happened. And this is actually well documented. There's nothing kind of hidden. It's the documents, the letters from the head of the trauma service, the head of the spinal service, they're all openly available on Twitter and also my site. And they clearly say that basically they find that there's no evidence to support their use, that they do any benefit apart from making people uncomfortable, hurting people, making more injuries happen. And in their own spinal service, they noted a number of tragic cases where people had died, you know, either due to infected skin sores as a result of being in prolonged spinal immobilization and having these hard collars on for a prolonged period of time. And in the end, for 5 years, they basically said, we're going to trial using no hard collars at all in our hospital, in our service. And they would use a soft collar. And after the five-year trial, they said that nothing bad's happened and no one's complained, and we think it's a far better way of managing these either potential or even actual cervical spine injured patients. So a lot of criticism that we've had is that, oh, well, you know, what about people who've actually had a cervical spine injury? What do you do about them? And the spinal service is pretty clear. We use soft collars for them as well, and they've had no issues at all. They're going to publish their 8-9 year data coming soon, so it'll be out there for the record for people to examine and criticize. But so basically the spinal service that we were bringing these people to has actually told us to stop using it. So that to me is a pretty powerful indicator of really the support in our state to do it. And the ambulance service said, okay, we've changed it, we're going to throw them out. And on one day, they stopped using them and soft collars were introduced. My service, the flying doctor service, took a bit more time to kind of like change that approach, but it's happened. So now, over a year and a half now, we no longer carry hard collars in the aircraft. We have soft collars, and I've used it multiple times in trauma patients. And to be honest, from my personal provider viewpoint, I find it far more satisfactory. I remember times, and I'm sure you can relate to this and listeners out there, that this kind of game that we would play with putting a hard collar on and having a drunk trauma patient, you know, get really agitated, want to take the collar off because they hurt. They're uncomfortable. Let's be honest about it. They're nothing comfortable about them. They make you feel tight around your neck. They cause your neck spasm and pain. And how many times have we put a collar on, a hard collar on, and people in the end, after 10, 15, 20 minutes, actually start complaining of neck pain, which is a complete ludicrous game where you actually put on something that actually now causes neck pain, which then kind of brings you to this vicious spiral where, oh, now they've got neck pain, so we can't clear them clinically, and so therefore we've got to leave the collar on and they get more neck pain. And I'm sure you've had, and I've had plenty of experience, we had this game where in the end I would be taking the collar off for the flight, for the transport, and then embarrassingly, like in the 10 minutes before actually handing them over to the emergency department crew, is putting it back on and apologizing. and no, you laugh, but this is true. And apologizing to the patient, look, I'm sorry I have to do this, but the hospital will expect this on. And, you know, I know we haven't had it on for the flight and all this stuff, but I just need to do this because, you know, they're gonna be very critical of what's occur. And so you'd play this kind of this game because you know the patients did far better without it, but you have this game where the hospital receiving staff, you know, would be critical if you didn't have it on. But now in my state, there's no, you know, there's no criticism because it's gone as a statewide organizational blanket change. And it's, and I talk to the flight nurses and they think, it's, why didn't we do this years ago? This is far better care. We're not kind of, you know, and I'm sure you've seen it, you know, we've had to restrain people in the past, had to sedate them. Sometimes people were intubated because they were so agitated with the collar on and we thought it was too dangerous. So all these things, which I think I would say was all unnecessary due to a blind faith application of an intervention that was brought in with really very, if not zero, evidence base. And it was essentially fear-based medicine, if I could put it that way. It was the fear that you would make someone paralyzed if you didn't immobilize their spine, you know, appropriately, in inverted commas. And sadly, and this is my part in the history of it, is that through ATLS, this is a global thing that was spread through education, that ATLS said you have to do it because of this. And really, there was no questioning of it until very recently. So I think that's a reasonable way to begin the discussion.
And I think you bring up a heck of a point there, because one of the problems I've noticed with C-collars, and this was from my field experience, is that you have, and this is also with backboards, you have someone who's walking around, they've self-extricated, they're moving their head, they're talking just fine, and you come up and you ask them if they're having any pain, they're like, eh, my neck hurts a little bit now. And so next thing you know, they're, while they're standing there, put on a C-collar, and then they're backboarded standing. You know, just minutes ago, they were moving their head, turning every which way. They were doing everything. It didn't bother them. And I think that's why the rollout criteria is, I don't know if that's a protocol that you have on yours or if that's a standard that you all use, but things like the Nexus criteria or the Canadian C-spine rules, you know, those types of rollout criteria I tend to use right away. And I try and keep people from being in a C-collar for that long if possible. I'm starting to move to almost exclusively doing the C-collar as a soft collar now.
Yeah, look, I think kudos to you. And I didn't think that it was much of a groundswell of change globally. I thought it was just a Queensland thing we did here in Australia, you know, call the Australians crazy. I'm talking, you know, via FOMED and social media, I've talked to a number of people, providers from America. You know, I've spoken to two providers from America where they've said the same thing. Their service has ditched the hard collar. So I'm not trying to say that this is I'm making stories up just to try to push the issue. But actually, there was a wilderness ranger who I podcasted with just, 6 months ago, and he said, yeah, his service has actually gotten rid of them like 4 years ago because it just is much easier to use either no collar or a soft collar than what they used to do, which made their life incredibly hard in a mountain setting, trying to move a spinal immobilized patient. Now, the other thing is, and then there was an ambulance, EMS medical director from, I can't remember the state now, I apologize, but he said that similarly via Twitter, he told me, yeah, we've done the same thing. We've gotten rid of it and we're not going back. It's far better. And look, I think no one is saying don't do good spinal care. That shouldn't be the message. No one is saying let's completely abandon spinal care and it's just a free-for-all and we'll just, you know, throw people in the back of the ambulance any which way. No one's saying that. It's just saying the hard collar didn't really or doesn't play a role in that. And I think that's something that some people really are finding hard to accept because it's been so entrenched. And I think you're right, the whole thing about the patient walking around and then all of a sudden let's put them back in the car, put a collar on, and then we'll cut the car roof off and all that kind of stuff and do it all that. No, look, that, like, you laugh, but that's actually happened. And I thought that was just a relic of the past. But actually in the last 6 months, I'll have to drag up the report. But actually here in Australia, there was a case in New South Wales in the last 6 months where that actually happened, where a woman fell out of, I can't remember the exact suit, but she fell out of a story window, you know, a multi-level story window, I think a couple of floors up. She fell and she actually did fracture her C-spine. But anyway, what happened was that her friend, instead of calling an ambulance, which is the right thing to do, decided that put her in the back of their vehicle, their car, and drive her to the emergency department, which is what happened. But then when the emergency team came out and saw that and she's complaining a lot of neck pain, that's exactly what happened, is that they put on a hard collar, they called in the fireys, even though this woman had been, you know, walking around at the scene, yeah, sure, with neck pain, and she did have a proven cervical fracture, but she was walking around at scene, was able to get into a car by, you know, herself or with some help with her friend and you know, and be driven in a private vehicle. But then the emergency team says, no, we got to do full ATLS. So hard collar went on, kept her in the car, called the fire department in, cut the roof off for some reason, and cut the roof off and did the whole backboard and all that kind of thing. Look, it's absolutely true. She did have a cervical spine fracture, but luckily she wasn't paralyzed and she hasn't been paralyzed or had ongoing neurological injury. But the case makes you reflect upon the power of a certain dogmatic approach, like the ATLS approach, and also common plain sense. You know, I mean, just common sense that, you know, like you said, someone's walking around, no paralysis, but yes, they have neck pain. And I don't know if you've seen many of those cases, but we see a lot of those type of cases in the pre-hospital setting. You know, a guy come off a motorbike or a horse, you know, and got some pain, but walking around. Now, in those cases, you do need to be careful of the C-spine. You do need to manage the C-spine or the spinal care carefully. You can't be reckless about it. But does it actually mean you need a collar? And I would argue no. And certainly for us, in our protocols now with the Queen's Ambulance, someone like that, they get a soft collar. And if they can be walked out of the vehicle, you know, if they can extricate themselves out of the vehicle, that's what that would be done. But because of this ongoing dogma of ATLS, is that New South Wales case where a person was, even though they had walked into the car, had made their own way into the car, that they were cut out of the vehicle due to this concern. And I think actually the doctors there asked the fire department to actually do it, even though the door's perfectly open, you can open the door perfectly well. But this poor guy has now got his car completely destroyed for, I would say, a questionable clinical benefit, particularly when, you know, the woman was walking around, sure, with neck pain because she had a broken neck. But luckily, she didn't have any spinal cord injury. But the concern, the fear that she would be suddenly paralyzed if you had moved her the wrong way, made this kind of action. Now, you can look, I have to say, you can debate either way, because clearly they did what they thought was right and the patient has done well. And so, you know, I'm not going to argue that there was some terrible error made there, but I would just say it could have been done differently and it could have been done, I think, in a much more rational way.
All right, and we're going to call it quits after this little part of the episode. Again, this is a multi-part episode with Min Lekong. The main reason why is because this is going to take a little bit of time to actually go through all the bases, but essentially you have now a background and a primer to the sea collar debate and what is going on. On the upcoming episode, we're going to talk more about the different aspects of the pros and cons of a rigid sea collar. As a quick reminder, for those of you who are listening, if you could go over to iTunes at some point and give us a 5-star review. If you think we are worthy of a 5-star review, that'd be very helpful. If you do not think we are there yet, that is totally fine. What I'd like you to do instead is email me at thetotalem@gmail.com and tell me what I can do to get better so that we can get this 5-star review. Again, it really helps us out in the ratings if you can do that, and that will be a huge success for us if we can keep climbing up the ratings and showing what we can do as a new podcast. So, until next time, continue to provide total care everywhere.